Welcome to the Saturday Night Live Workshop of WCNA 31. My name is Brian, and I am an addict.
Hi, Brian.
Can we please open this meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer? God, grant the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Someone has been asked to read what is the Narcotics Anonymous program.
I'm Susan, I'm an addict.
Hi, Susan.
And this is What is the Narcotics Anonymous program. NA is a nonprofit fellowship or society of men and women for whom drugs have become a major problem. We are recovering addicts who meet regularly to help each other stay clean. This is a program of complete abstinence from all drugs. There is only one requirement for membership, the desire to stop using. We suggest that you keep an open mind and give yourself a break. Our program is a set of principles written so simply that we can follow them in our daily lives. The most important thing about them is that they work. There are no strings attached to NA. We are not affiliated with any other organizations. We have no initiation fees or dues, no pledges to sign, no promises to make to anyone. We are not connected with any political, religious, or law enforcement groups and are under no surveillance at any time. Anyone may join us, regardless of age, race, sexual identity, creed, religion, or lack of religion. We're not interested in what or how much you use, who your connections were, what you have done in the past, how much or how little you have, but only what you want to do about your problem and how we can help. The newcomer is the most important person at any meeting because we can only keep what we have by giving it away. We have learned from our group experience that those who keep coming to our meetings regularly stay clean.
Right on. Thank you.
Thank you. Someone has been asked to read Why Are We Here?
Hi, my name is John. I'm an addict from Seattle.
Hi, John. Welcome.
Why are we here? Before coming to the fellowship of NA, we cannot manage our own lives. We cannot live and enjoy life as other people do. We had to have something different, and we thought we had found it in drugs. We placed their use ahead of the welfare of our families, our wives, our husbands, and our children. We had to have drugs at all costs. We did many people great harm, but most of all, we harmed ourselves. Through our inability to accept personal responsibilities, we were actually creating our own problems. We seemed to be incapable of facing life on its own terms. Most of us realized that in our addiction, we were slowly committing suicide. But addiction is such a cunning enemy of life that we had lost the power to do anything about it. Many of us ended up in jail or sought help through medicine, religion, and psychiatry. None of these methods was sufficient for us. Our disease always resurfaced or continued to progress until in desperation we sought help from each other in Narcotics Anonymous. After coming to NA, we realized we were sick people who suffered from a disease from which there is no known cure. It can, however, be arrested at some point and recovery is then possible.
Right on. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks to all the readers. At this time, I'd like to introduce Judy G. from Hawaii.
I hate these things. Hi, I'm Judy, and I'm an addict. And I love being clean. I just love it.
Alita.
Yeah. Thank you, baby. Oh, I love being clean. I wish I knew what I was going to tell y'all, but I don't. I have rewritten things a million times, but I don't like people who read things they wrote. I asked the guy before I come up here what I'm supposed to say. Of course, my sponsor always tells me what you say is what happened, what it was like, and what it's like now. And I'll do it real short, you know. I came here losing everything. I came here for the first time in September 17, 1973. Because I just went back out and shot a little dope for a little while. So my clean date is July 4th, 1976. I have 29 years clean. And that is absolutely amazing. because I cannot picture going 2.5 hours without sticking something in my body, you know. And I don't care, you know, if you put it up your nose or up your occoli or some people live here, and or in your arm. Anything that changes me, I can't have. I did not come in here willingly. I had absolutely no desire to quit using. None. None. I would love to have been able to find a way to shoot dope and stay okay, you know. I can't stay okay. I'm going to cut my story kind of short because they only give me a half hour. You can do 29 years in a half hour. That's 1 year a minute. I can't do 10 years a minute. Anyhow, all my life I felt different, and all my life I felt like I didn't fit in. And the thing about that is I didn't want to fit in. I really didn't want to. I just wanted you to love me exactly the way I was, for who I was. Not for what I had or not for what I knew, but just Judy. You know, and for most of my life, I had no idea who Judy was. I come from a very, very large family, born in Wisconsin. And I'm the only girl. I have 15 brothers. Now, that's okay because I didn't want any sisters. I'm very selfish and self-centered. Still am. And I didn't want any sisters because I didn't want to share my brothers anyhow. And I'm the only one that got their own room. Of course, it was a closet that they made into a room. In the old houses, closets were pretty big. You know, that they made into a room. It held a single bed and a dresser. And you could barely get between the two, but it was my room. No door. Curtain. But anyhow, my family, I had a nice family. You know, there's only one other addict in the family. That's my oldest brother. And he's not practicing. He's got it down. You know, has tried our program several times and just don't make it. It's my oldest brother. And for me, I was smoked my first cigarette at 11, took my first drink at 12, took my first prescribed drug at 13, and ended up in the nut house. You know, and I loved it actually because that explained what was wrong with me. I was crazy. And it was really okay to be crazy because that helped me know what was wrong, who I was and why I didn't fit in. I was crazy. So that was okay with me. You know, I didn't use drugs for a long, long time. Long, long time. Actually, I was in my teens, you know. And I never hung out with drug addicts. And and what happened was, and it's a long story, so I'll tell it real short. I was in Vegas. I was working in Vegas, and I had left my daughter with my parents in Wisconsin, and my father called me and said, if you don't come home, I'm going to put you back in the nut house. So I got hysterical. The guy I was working, we worked shifts at the Sahara, waiter, waitress, busboy. The guy I worked with, unbeknownst to me, was a heroin addict. And he said, I was hysterical and he wanted to calm me down. So he gave me a shot of Demerol in my muscle, which was the right thing to do. And when I came out of it, I saw him fixing, didn't know what it was, and I said, I want that. And from then on, I used, you know, until I got here. And like I said, I didn't come here willingly. You know, I went through a lot of using in California and Nevada. I used to run the border and smuggle drugs and use my kids to smuggle drugs across the Mexican border. And got busted there and did a few other things and all the things we do. And I would like to tell you I'm sorry for those things, but I'm not. I'm not sorry for what I did during my using. I'm sorry I had to do them. But, you know, I did what I did, you know, to stay well. That's what I did. So, anyhow, I ended up in the nut house again in, did I skip something? I got real strung out, of course, because I never quit. And my family had a meeting in Wisconsin, decided to send my brother to California to see if he could fix me. And he came and took my kids away, and then I was married to a Marine who was overseas. And they took my kids away, and they drove me to Synanon, you know, and I fixed all the way there, you know, and I went into Synanon, and they kept me because they said they wouldn't put a dog like me out in the street, you know, and I was. I was, you know, very thin, 85, 87 pounds, shooting dope in my neck, didn't have any veins left, you know, covered with sores, thought I was looking good. Now we think that if you're real thin, it's okay, you know, and you could put your fingers in my hip bones, you know, but I thought I looked good. But anyhow, they kept me for a while, and it was a nice place. I really dug being there. I did. But I split from there after 9 weeks, and of course, used within 2 days. And I used with my federal parole officer in the federal building. You know, I went for my first meeting with him, and he said, you gonna stay clean? And I says, look, I've been clean for 9 weeks. I deserve to get loaded. Now, I'm just gonna go down to San, then I was in LA. I'm just gonna go down to San Diego and cop. I'm gonna use for a couple days, and that'll be it. So this guy, who used to be a dope fiend, went to the VA hospital in LA, copped some dope, and we got loaded in the federal building. And, of course, I was off and running, and I don't know what happened to him because I got a different parole officer. But that didn't last too long. I went on a run for a couple of years, but then I was staying in Orange County, California. And again, they took my kids away from me. You know, I have 3 kids. All my kids have different handicaps, and they're great kids. But a lot of work. You know, by then my husband was fed up. He's an alcoholic who has never used other drugs, and that's why you say it that way. And he had it. He divorced me, and in court he cried, and he said, Your Honor, I love her. I just don't know what else to do. You know, because while he was overseas, I sold our house. Well, I bought it, you know. Of course, he's been making the payments for, you know, 10 or 15 years. But I sold our house, and within 10 days, me and 2 guys shot the equity. And, so when he came home from overseas, he didn't know where we lived or where his kids were. So you can't blame the guy. You know, but of course I did, because I blamed some of it on him. But anyhow, then I ended up in the nut house again in Orange County, California, kicking dope one more time. Kids gone, old man gone. My old man then was here in Kaneohe, Marine Corps Station. And now this is how sick he was. Remember, I told you he's an alcoholic, still drinking. And he calls the nut house in Orange County and talks to me and asks me if I want to put our relationship back together again. And I talked to my doctor, and he says, what have you got to lose? You know, I had nothing left. What have you got to lose? So I got 6 spoons of Mexican Brown and got on the plane and came to Hawaii. Had no idea that I flew over water. Did not know how I got here, really. The man meets me at the plane, didn't see me for a year and a half, and had no idea what I looked like because I had lost so much weight. He didn't know who I was. And when we finally got together, I said, you better get me a room because I'm going to be sick. So that was the first time he'd seen me in a year and a half, and that's what he heard out of my mouth. So he took me to the Holiday Inn, which then was right at the end of the airport, right out the driveway. And while he was bringing my bags in, I fixed, you know. And I had just enough left for the morning. And I said, you know, you better get me some help. Do something, because I'm going to be sick. And so the next day, I told him, you got 1 hour, because I can't handle it anymore. I'm going to have to go find something and cop. So he took me down to what was then the Waikiki Drug Clinic, you know, and I was already having seizures. And they lied, because, of course, I said we were divorced, and they put me in Triple Army Medical Center, you know, as his wife, and started kicking dope one more time. And while I was there, now, mind you, I hallucinated most of the time. I didn't know who or what I was, didn't know where I was. And these people, and then it was, because mind you, it's 1973, from AA and NA, came to the hospital, and they checked me out. Like you check out baggage, you know, they would come and they would check me out and they would take me someplace. I don't know where they took me. But I do remember one night we were driving someplace and I felt the wind going through the hair on my arms. And it felt sexy. It felt so good. And I don't remember when I'd ever felt that before. But mind you, I'm spacing. Yeah, it's like I'm Looney Tunes without acid, but, you know, with flashbacks and acid and all that other stuff and withdrawal, and I also been on methadone, I wasn't too together and had no idea, you know, where they were taking me. I got most of my story from other people because I don't know. I was a foul-mouthed little broad. You can't believe how nice I'm talking. And I'm very assertive, aggressive, and if you ask me how I am today, I'll tell you I'm mean, I'm sassy, I'm not happy, I don't like you. You know, but you know what, I get a whole lot more attention that way. If you say fine, people keep walking. You know, so I learned to say I'm mean and clean, and years ago, sober and serene is what they said, and I said anyhow. Nobody wanted me in meetings here, because mind you now, NA was just starting here in Hawaii. You know? There was about 13 members, and a guy from AA started the meetings here because they didn't want those dope addicts in AA. So this guy, PP, he's got all the literature from Jimmy and started a meeting with these guys. Now, he never talked at our meeting. And he let the guys, you know, run it. And after about 6 months, he said, I'm not doing this. It's your job. And that's the start of NA in Hawaii in 1972, I believe. Anyhow, they were here, and these are the guys that are coming and getting me and picking me up and taking me places. And I did not want what you had to offer unless it was your food, your job, or your old man, or your money. You know, outside of that, just stay away from me. And I said that a lot kinder than I used to say that. But they kept getting me. Now, mind you, I had no place to live. I had no clothes to wear. I had no money. I had no food to eat. My kids were gone. My old man didn't want nothing to do with me anymore. And these people came and picked me up over and over again. Over and over. And I thought they really liked me. I thought I must be great because they kept coming to get me. And every few days, a different person would come and get me. Mind you, there's only 13 people in the program then, right? And I asked them later, because I thought they really liked me, and they said, oh, Judy, when we got full of you, when we couldn't take it anymore, we passed you on to somebody else. God, how dare they? I asked one of the guys that 12-stepped me, and some of you know him, Tom M. and Tom C., what I was like, and they said Linda Blair and The Exorcist, you know, and my head never stopped turning, you know. And they used to tell me to tone down my story and not tell so much, and you know, because I was scaring people, and you know, and I've learned to do that. But you know, I thought it was about how bad we were, you know, and I thought I had to justify my good by how bad I had it and what I did. You know, so I learned as the years went by, you know, I learned that this program is dependent upon my belief in a power greater than myself and working these steps. Now, I don't believe how long people wait to work the steps. It just makes me crazy. I was in the nut house and my sponsor, who, by the way, said, I'm your sponsor, you know, said you will start the fourth step because you already done 1, 2, and 3. If you had any power whatsoever, you sure as H wouldn't be here. You know, and look where you're at, the nut house. We won't even talk about that. And 3, you know, you can't, someone else can. Why don't you let them? You know, well, I had a God before I got here. You know, God, you guys didn't give me God. God gave me you guys. God gave me NA. I used to read the Bible, shoot dope. You know, say, get me through the border and I'll never do it again, you know, while I'm thinking how much I'm carrying through and hoping I can make it. You know, so I have a God, and, you know, and it's a God I may or may not understand, you know, but it doesn't make any difference as long as I'm not the power, you know. Okay. I'm trying to watch the time. I'm trying to be a good kid. They all know I'm not a good kid. I'm not. You know, and I don't want to be. So anyhow, this, I started my first four-step while I was still in the Nut Warden Tripper. I did it on three things, because I didn't know nothing about this program. I did it on three things that haunted me and hurt me. You know, I was responsible for my boyfriend getting killed. I set him up. And I used to tell the whole story, but I'm not going to tell it today. Suffice it to say that he was shot 21 times, 19 times in vital spots, you know. And I am really responsible for that. And there's nothing I can do to fix it. Because his parents got very upset with me, they had me kidnapped and they put a contract out on me. But they happened to hire somebody who I used to fix with, so we took their money and you know what we did. But anyhow, so that was the other thing. And then, of course, my daughter. I was terribly frightened for my daughter because I was hiding her. Because I thought, how would I get even with somebody who was responsible for the death of my son? I'd get their kid. I was terrified they were going to get my kid. You know, so I did. I had her for a long time. You know, anyhow, God, I keep losing track. There's a guy that 12-stepped me right there. Hi, Tom. He's the one that had says my head keeps spinning. Excuse me. So, anyhow, my first four-step was done on the three things, you know. And that was okay. And I did them with a lady called Grady, you know, who, like I said, she told me that she was my sponsor. Now, I went to meetings every single day. Somebody took me every single day. Well, like I said, we only had one meeting of NA, so I went to AA. And if you don't like that, talk to your sponsor, you know. I got what I got the way I got it. There's so many meetings now, you know, that you have a choice. We didn't have a choice. If you hated the guy that ran the meeting, you had to go and smile, because it was the only meeting around. You know, so anyhow, after these guys worked so hard getting me clean, you know what they did? They all left town. They left town. It was just me. Now, I don't know what to do except go to meetings. So I go to AA. I put my number in the newspaper. I'm the NA helpline. I'm the literature. I'm everything. There's no members, just me. And I'm going to Fort DeRussy, and I'm reading to the wall. And I know everybody thinks I'm nuts. Here's this lady making coffee, reading to the wall. I read out of the AA book, you know, because that's what we have. And I want to wave it at you, but I have my original white book. Jimmy signed it. Betty signed it. You know, Doug signed it. You know, my original book. I have carried it with me every single day since 1973. It has never been off my person. The furthest this goes is my purse. You know, and it's so wrinkled and old and ratty, and I've laminated it, and it's full of tobacco in between the lamination and everything else. But you know what? That's the only book, as far as I'm concerned, that you need, is that little white book. It has everything in there that you need. I know, because I'm here. You know, I like all these books. I think the best one is the It Works How and Why, the thin one, not the workbook. I can't talk about the workbook. But I tell them, wait till you got 5 years, because that's when you're bored and you got nothing else to do. You know, when you're so crazy that you've forgotten what it's like to work the steps, you know, that I'm going to get in trouble. But anyhow, I like the green book the best outside of the white book, you know. And the best part of that book is recovery and relapse. I have underlined it and underlined it and underlined it. I read it on the bus. I read it. I still read it. Because it reminds me, and it says, you know, that there will come a time when you'll get bored with this, you know, and tired of repeating the same stuff over and over again. You got to find a way to get back to where you came from in your head. You know, as we come here desperate and we get well, you know, we do recover and then we forget. That's why you work with newcomers. You know, you work with newcomers to remind you where you came from. I didn't know how bad I was until I finally got a girl who was just like me. Oh, my God, you know. And it's like my first sponsor got tired of me and left town and turned me over to her sponsor. And I didn't know you couldn't do that. And she said, this is your sponsor? And I go, okay. She was my sponsor for the next 15 years, Mary. And I've had a lot of sponsors. Problem is they keep dying on me. And the last time I asked the lady, Lida, to be my sponsor, I said, I promise not to kill you. But anyhow, I do believe that you work the steps and the traditions. If you're a little bit bored and a little complacent in your recovery, work the traditions in your life. Do you know I hated my sponsor when she said the seventh tradition, you're self-supporting through your own contributions? I thought everybody else was supposed to contribute to my support. You know, it was really hard. I didn't understand until I was divorced and my kids were gone that I was unemployable. You know? So anyhow, I learned how to work the traditions in my family, in my life, just like I worked the steps to me personally. You know, this program works, and for me it works like nothing else ever did. You know, I love drugs. I love everything about them except the price I had to pay. But outside of that, I love them. I used to say drugs are instant love, instant warmth, instant release from everything that hurts me. Well, I've been around here a long time. I know it's almost time for me to quit. We started a little late. And I want to tell you that if you have any dreams, hang out, because they can come true. Anything you want. And I used to hate when people told me that. And this is before I even got here. You know how they say your potential and all that kind of stuff. And you know, it's like, anything you want. You wouldn't believe the stuff I did. You know? I don't believe the stuff I did. I have had just as much heartache clean, more probably, than I did when I was loaded. Because I felt on a level I cannot believe. And I wondered, you know, why I've been good. See, I think if I'm good, bad stuff's not going to happen to me, you know, or to members of my family. But it does. You know, and I have come here crying and dying and screaming. And you people, I'll tell you, don't touch me. I don't want you hugging me. Leave me alone. But you let me sit there and be hurt and cry and do whatever I had to do except get loaded, you know. And I did get loaded, by the way, and I'll tell you what happened. I became Mrs. N.A. Remember I told you I was the only person doing meetings? Well, people started coming eventually, you know, about a year and a half later. In close to 2 years, we had quite a few people. All that time, the meeting was at my house. The NA phone number was my phone number. So someone had told me it's best to get it out of your house. So we moved it to Kapahulu Library. And I'd love to tell you I got loaded on a 12-step call. And I talked to my sponsor just before I left the house. And I was working the steps. And the guy only lived a couple blocks from me, and I'd taken him to meetings before. And I couldn't get anybody to go with me. And I went to his house, and I shot his dope. And for a couple weeks, I chaired NA meetings because nobody else wanted to, and I guess I didn't teach them, you know, because everybody at that time kicked in my house. People used to come to my house and kick and live in my house till they could afford to pay rent to someone else. They never wanted to pay rent to me. They just wanted to live free. And that got a little bit tiring. But so I was going to meetings and I was loaded. You know, and finally one night I just said, you know what, you effers, you know I'm loaded. You don't care. And I left. You know, and this is where the fellowship, I'm telling you, if you stick with the fellowship, it's awesome. Because I was right back to where I was at. And when I got busted at the border, I got busted with 87.6P pure. And I was spending $600 a day in Mexico for my habit. So when I went back out, I lost a whole lot within 2 weeks. It took me 2 years to pay back everything I lost. And because your tolerance doesn't go away. It doesn't go away. You know? And so Doug called me. Doug called me and said, why didn't you tell me you were loaded? And I says, why didn't you ask me? He says, you want to quit? I says, I can't. He says, will you do anything I tell you to do? I said, yeah. So he sent a ticket for the hydrofoil, came over to with this guy, Arnis, who was renting a room, brought the ticket over, and they took got a babysitter for me and put me on hydrofoil and sent me to Tom's house again. Tom's so lucky, he keeps getting me when I'm sick. And anyhow, that was the last time I used, you know. And I still go to meetings, a lot of meetings. Not as many as I did before because, you know, I'm getting older. I can't see at night. I have a few. I've learned a new level of powerless. My power chair keeps running out of power. And so I keep, yeah, I spent all of last meeting plugged into the wall. So different level of powerlessness. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor who works the steps. I sponsor some women, not as many as before, because I don't have the strength anymore. But I'll tell you, you know, I came here with no degrees. I ended up with 4 degrees. The United States Navy recruited me when I was 41 years old to be an intelligence specialist. And I had clearance. And I told the truth. And everybody laughed and said, don't fill out that paperwork. No way. I said, but they wrote me. They wrote me. They want me. And they did. And so for 7 years, I was in the Navy. Wow. And then I got appointed by the governor of Hawaii to the prosecuting attorney's office. You know, a limited 2-year appointment. Intake, domestic violence, spouse abuse, child abuse, and petty misdemeanor crimes. You know, I'm almost done, honest, David. I was so worried about filling out applications and stuff because of what I had to put down because my sponsor insisted that I was honest. And she said to me, Judy, do you believe God can make blind men see? And I said, yeah, I believe that. And she said, don't you think God can make seeing men blind? I'll tell you, jobs I should have never had, I have gotten. So don't say you can't do it, because you can. And when it's right, you'll get it. When it's right, because sometimes I wasn't ready. Anyhow, I am so thrilled. I've got to mention Gordy, because he was a very special guy. I used to shoot dope with this guy in Vegas in the early 60s, and he's gone now. He's passed away, but I can't be up here without mentioning him because he's very special. And God love him. NA works like nothing else. Get a sponsor, work the steps, and pass it on. And God bless.
Thank you, Judy, very much. It's always an honor and a privilege to hear somebody who has known our founding fathers and has been here, and I'm always indebted to those people. Before this meeting started, David, Judy, and I were standing off to the side, and somebody was supposed to come and start this meeting for you, and that person didn't show up, and so I said I would do this, so bear with me. I just saw the format when I walked up here. What I realized, I need to take this little folder down with me while David's speaking so I know how to help us close this meeting. I have to tell you, the next person who's going to come up here and share for you, it's an honor and a privilege so much and to introduce him. This is a man who taught me in my early recovery that what I should do on a Friday night is drive to the recovery house and make sure that not one seatbelt in my car was empty. He's taught me more than than words could say. He immolates a Narcotics Anonymous that seeps out of his pores to me, and I try and do what he does, and he's my sponsor, he's my best friend, I love him with all my heart, and he knows me better than anybody else on the planet. And it's an honor to introduce to you David J. from California.
Aloha, I'm David J. and I'm an addict. You guys having fun? Me too. Thank you, Judy. You know, I prayed about what I should share. We get a few years clean, and we could probably sit up here for a couple of hours if we went through it. My higher power told me to share about my relationship with the Hawaii Fellowship. I'm going to tell you what my bottom looked like. If you know what willful obstinance, total self-will, in the face of huge consequences looks like, then you'll identify with this. I get locked up for a crime I don't even remember committing. And you know what? I thought like I was totally by myself until I read in the basic text it said, some of us will spend the rest of our lives incarcerated for things that and crimes that we committed under the influence of drugs. I had a hostage in my life. I called her my girlfriend at that time. And she put up her house for me. I got out. I always read the Sunday paper, not because I wanted to educate myself, but I wanted who next to be, because the obituaries always told you who died, what age they were, and when their birthday was. You know? So I've been to a lot of people. Once I was arrested in Boston, they asked me who I was, and I said, my name's Freddie. They said, Freddie what? I said, Fred Mertz. And the guy said, that name sounds familiar to me. I've been to a lot of people, and I never wanted to be me. I was in the East Los Angeles yard. I was running with some Mexican nationalists. They had this little fire going, right, down the rail yard, and they were flipping tortillas on these stones. And I was hoping that somebody hadn't picked that spot to relieve themselves the night before on those rocks. It was a really good relationship with me and those brothers. They didn't speak English, and they didn't go into town, and I went into town for them, and they kept me loaded. And I stepped off the train for about 6-7 minutes in a place called Marysville, California. And you know the guys that push those little ice cream trucks? You know when you got just enough dope in you that it's good? It's good. It could be a little better, but it's good. And what we need now is some wham-whams and some zuzus. And here's the ice cream man. You know what I mean? Stop me when I'm passing by. So I climbed down, and I think it came to $3.75. And I had a $5 bill, and he was too loaded to make change, and I was too greedy to let him keep it. And the train started rolling, and I looked at the train. I thought, well, it's not up to speed yet. I'm good at getting free rides. You know what I mean? I can swing in and out of a boxcar, no problem. The problem that I have is those little ID things when you go through the cash register, when you go, I always forget to destroy those when I break into railroad cars. You know what I mean? If you've ever been convicted to idiocy, you might be related to me. I got busted with a whole railroad car full of beer in Dallas, Texas. I look up at the train, and it's starting to roll. It's probably going 29, 33, 35, 39 miles an hour. And I'm on the old platform where people used to get on and off the train. This was just a place where they got water or they switched crews or something. And I'm standing on the platform, and I'm getting ready to make my, okay, the boxcar's coming, it's open, and I don't go. And this is somebody who bought life on the installment plan of death. And yet, at this moment, where I could possibly lose my life or have my leg severed by these railroad cars, I decided to back away from the platform. Because I've spent most of my life wrestling with my fear and my desire. The brothers on the train threw my stuff down, and they said, "We'll meet you on 8th Street in Portland." Now, anybody that's been in Portland knows, if you can't cop on 8th Street, there ain't nothing happening in Portland. You know what I mean? As simple as that. So I got my stuff. I looked over at the ice cream dude, and I said, "See what you did?" Because I've been saying that all my life to people, places, and things. Or I've been saying to prosecuting DAs, public defenders, and judges, "You don't understand." You know? I said, "What's going on in town, homeboy?" He said, "There's a carnival." So I walked down to the carnival, and I got myself a job. I could always get a job. I couldn't keep one. So they put me in charge of the tickets. That's like putting a fox in charge of the hen house, right? So you come to the carnival, and you're doing good. You're working. You're a weekend warrior. And I see you, and I see that you look nice. You smell nice. You got money in your pocket. And I tell you, I'll give you 10 times the amount of tickets as that booth over there if you give me some of what you got. And no matter how high I got, the pain that I felt didn't go away. I called the woman up and I said, "What's going on with my case?" She said, "They're going to come take my house if you don't turn yourself in." And somebody behind me said, "I'll turn myself in." The reason why I say this is I believe that each of us have a spark of the divine. That when it says in the service prayer, "May this truly be your work and not ours," that part of us that came out of the bonfire, that sparkle, that torch that gets reignited through the love that we receive from the people who are waiting for us in the rooms and halls of Narcotics Anonymous, brings us back into our true being. She came and got me. I drove back to a place called Dodge City. The reason why they called that was because there was a lot of gunfire. It's in the East Bay of Oakland, Northern California. And I went and copped some dope, had a flat tire, rolled home on a flat, got everything ready, dropped it in the sink, tore that, you know, that little U-shaped trap out. Because, you know, I'm having fun, right? I'm having fun tearing this thing with my head underneath the drain, all this water coming down on me, and I got my act together. The next day I went to the courthouse and I waited 7 hours. And my committee screamed at me, "What are you doing? Why are we doing this? You know what? We're supposed to run until they catch us." And when he did come and get me, I went in and I did my time. I wound up, because I don't know how to behave in a controlled environment, I wound up in East Block, which is a segregated housing unit in San Quentin. It's a SHU. The first tier is AgSeg. 2, 3, and 4 are death row, and 5 is AgSeg. It is eerily quiet. I'm used to insanity. People screaming, "Come get me, mommy!" You know what I mean? Watching this blanket burning, coming down through the cell block. People saying, "I'll throw this urine." You know what I mean? I'm used to noise. This place was like a crypt. It was so quiet. These guys only talked one time of the day. They didn't talk in the morning. They didn't talk when people went to the doctor. They didn't talk when people went out to these little chicken coop yards. They talked at dinner time. And if you're like me, I spent my whole life trying to get to the big time. And what my experience of the big time is that they talked about yesterday and ex-wives and old girlfriends and lost dreams and lost children and disappointed parents. And I think that the loving God was as kind to me as he could to allow me to sit in that situation for 5 months until I got the message that there is no future in the way that you're living. I received a letter, and I'm not the sharpest knife in the drawer. It took me a week to figure out that there was no return address. The basic text also says that some of us will lose our parents and our family members forever because they left us in self-preservation. And if that's your story, you're not alone. I've had the absolute blessing to make my own family, my own ohana, in the journey of my recovery. There was a 5x3 card, and it showed a picture of two professors who became bureaucrats and three of their children. And it says, we've worked hard all of our lives. We bought a seagoing vessel. We bought a seaplane. We've invested well. We worked hard for 30 years. We are now going to travel. It said, our youngest daughter is at graphic arts school in UCLA. Our oldest daughter is working on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C. And our youngest son graduated the military and has completed pharmacy school. And I thought, my brother went to pharmacy school and he didn't tell me. I could have helped him. You know what I mean? And it said, David is in prison again. A week later, I realized there was no return address. And you know that when life on life's terms, the inability to think rationally, self-will corners us into a place where we cannot get ourselves out of, that's what happened to me. I had to think about my life and where do I come from. I'm the product of American GI who went to Southeast Asia, that lived on a military base in Busan, Korea, that met a Korean girl, got together with her, and produced me, and went home. And my memory of my childhood is horrific. But what I want to tell you is that 10% of my life I was a victim, and 90% of the time I was a front row volunteer. My mom was a beautiful woman, just like you women in this room today. And when my dad went home, you know, she did the things that beautiful women do, who are lonely, who are in pain. And I spent a lot of time alone. I used to steal food, fruit off of cars. These little carts that have the little mule or horse in front of, or the oxen. And they would beat me down for being hungry. They came into my neighborhood and they built this chain link fence and they built this school. And when they got done, they said, you don't get to go. I come from an environment of poverty, extreme poverty, and a society of extreme prejudice. That the color of your skin, the blood that runs through your veins, makes a difference on what kind of future you have. My sponsor told me that in the early 70s, when they wrote, what is the Narcotics Anonymous, that there was an addict who argued profusely that we were going to have regardless of sexual orientation. If I had to pay my sponsor, like I would have to pay a therapist, I would have at least owed him $100,000 by now. The kids used to come out on recess and they would chase each other on these jungle gyms and the merry-go-round, on the teeter-totters, and they would push each other on the swings, and they looked at me like I was a ghost, like I was vapor before the morning sun. And when they went back in, I got down on my hands and my knees, and I dug like a dog. See, because I saw the fun that they had. And once I got underneath that fence, and I got to participate in imagination and fantasy, I got to stand directly in the middle of the teeter-totter and keep it balanced. I got to push the merry-go-round until it went so fast that when I leaned my head over, the whole sky swirled around and I forgot that I was ethnically unclean. I didn't hear the recess bell ring. And when they came out, they hurled these rocks and these dirt clods at me. And they said, go home, G.I. Joe. They said, go home, Kennedy, because we don't want you. You don't belong here. And those rocks and those dirt clods hurt, but not like the pain in here. When I first came to Narcotics Anonymous and you talked about a power greater than anything that I could conceive, cared about me and you when we weren't interested in having a relationship with that power. One day, I stole some food and I shot across this crosswalk. And while I was going across this crosswalk, I got tagged by this marathon cab. And it sounds kind of crazy that in Southeast Asia that there would be a marathon cab. But any place that the U.S. military has gone, we leave helicopters, city buses, military vehicles, personal vehicles, any kind of equipment that you can think. You can go just about anywhere in the world and find an old Coca-Cola machine and some old Coke bottles. I think as I bounced along the pavement, the guy stopped his cab and he got out and he reached down to help me. My oldest emotional memory is fear. And when he reached down to grab me, I bit him in the hand. And I had this dark, thick liquid oozing from the top of my head. And, you know, when I came to Narcotics Anonymous, I had a beautiful set of locks. They went on vacation. And I have this groove in my head, and I don't have enough self-esteem yet to shave my head. Because it looks like I'm related to Frankenstein. The only thing I'm missing is a couple of bolts. You know? So, my mom happened to be coming home that day, and she took me to the military base, and I stayed in that hospital for a long time. And when I got out, she was acting a little funny, you know what I mean? And we got on this bus, and each of us has our own frequency. Some people, you know, thrive where the ocean meets the beach, and some people thrive, you know, at mid-level, and some people thrive at mountaintop. We all have our own frequency, and I love to be where the ocean meets the shore. It has a rhythm and a comfort that no other place on the planet does for me. And I appreciate every type of climate. You know what I mean? We were sitting on this bus by the back stairwell. My mom was sitting by the window, and I was sitting beside her. And I said, "Where are we going?" She said, "Baby boy, we're going to the beach." And I told her after a little bit of time on this bus, I said, "Mommy, this is not the way to the beach." She said, "Baby boy, we're going to make one stop, and then we're going to make a transfer." She touched me lightly on my back at this particular stop. And see, you guys came in since the meeting started, and you've had a conversation. You've touched each other lightly. You've kissed each other. You've squeezed one another's hands. You had an entire conversation, but you didn't say anything. She touched me lightly on my back. I knew she wanted to get around me. I leaned forward. She stepped around me. This guy walked down out of the bus. He grabbed me by my wrist. She walked to the front of the bus. She looked back at me. She stepped off. I cried for the next 9 hours. We went from the very tip of South Korea almost to the DMZ. When I got to this orphanage, I still didn't fit in. I was the only kid that wasn't 100% Korean. This loving God that I have no understanding about, still someday, had these two PhDs from Seattle, Washington come halfway around the planet and adopt me. But the damage was done. My tape said, if you ever really get to know me, you'll know what kind of a piece of shit I am, and you'll send me back. I have been a campaigning politician for your vote of acceptance my entire life until I met you in the fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. My parents were like everybody else's, trying to do better for themselves and doing better for their children. And at 13, you know what, I was comfortable in this little ethnic melting pot of Seattle, Washington, and she got the call to be the Assistant Secretary of Commerce, you know. And we were going to move to Chocolate City, Washington, D.C., and I didn't want to move. I ran away. You know what, I pouted. You know what, life happens regardless of whether I throw a fit or not. Once I got to Washington, D.C., I learned something. I learned that if you could get yourself a six-pack and a four-fingered lid, that all the pain in the world will disappear, that you could become a movie star. You know what I mean? You could spend hours in the bathroom looking at yourself from different angles. You know what I mean? You could play the fashion runway model. Make sure the look was just right. You could look into the mirror and think, wow. See that? Didn't take much to entertain me. And drugs gave me what I needed. I believe the drugs kept me from committing suicide. But I bought death on the installment plan. And these are the things that I remember sitting in the cell in San Quentin. And the day that I got released, this monster woke up inside of me. They were counting out the 10, 20s to me. If you belong to CDC, if you're on parole and you wonder why you don't get your money at the gate anymore, I'm one of the reasons. They counted out these 10, 20s. I got through the last gate because most of my life I've been a passive-aggressive, attack-you-from-behind kind of person that I gave the universal sign of appreciation to the guard tower on the way out. And I got loaded because that's what I know how to do. That mere abstinence cannot keep me from having to deal with life, and I don't know how to deal without to deal life without the program of Narcotics Anonymous. My parole agent finally said to me, if you give one more dirty test, you're going to have to do a year, or you could go to a program. Now, it took me 45 minutes in the waiting room to kind of think that one out. 1 year, drug program. I got to go smoke a cigarette. Think about this. I went to this outpatient program, and the guy had 30 years clean, and he was a member of Narcotics Anonymous, and I didn't get much out of that program. It was a bunch of other convicts, and they passed paper on who was doing what. But you know what? This guy intrigued me, and he said, you know what? Just go to a meeting every day for a year if you can. And on New Year's Eve of 1992, I surrendered. And by the grace of God and the love of the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous and friends like you, you know what? I've been fortunate to keep my clean date in spite of myself. You know? I became a secretary of a meeting. I bought gourmet coffee. Bought cheesecake. Bought pastries. I rearranged the chair 3 or 4 times before you guys got there. I polished the floor. I put Windex on the readings. We played 40 questions with the speaker before we allowed them to share. And I went way out of town to find you guys. And I wound up at Post and Mason on a Saturday night. And I met some people from Sonoma, and I invited them out to share. They brought this guy with them, and he looked... You know what? I have lived in 49 states, and I have ripped people off, and I've been about 36 different people. And this guy looked like 2 of the 3 people that ripped me off. I instantly resented this guy from the bat, you know what I mean? So we're having a bite to eat and the meeting, and, you know, we exchange numbers, and we're hanging out, And finally, you know what, after going to meetings all this time, I said, hey, Billy, we're at his house, and he's cooking steaks. He lives in Sonoma, the Valley of the Moon. And you know what, I said, Billy, what did you do for a living? This is right, you know, how you talk to people when you're walking. I was going to the bathroom, and I got in his hallway. You know how people have pictures, you know, all down their hallway? And I stopped at this picture, and here was this picture with Billy in this dark tie, this green uniform with a green hat on. He said, I was a correctional officer in San Quentin. I said, you damn sure were, and give me back my radio. Billy lost his job at San Quentin because he decided to stay up for a week and not clean his nostrils before a sergeant came in. Billy decided he was going into the grocery business, and he spent all the time in the freezer with those cans that you and he had whipped cream all over his face. So he lost that job. So Billy finally decided he was going to be a union electrician. You know what? He hasn't lost that job because of you guys. So we're talking on the phone one day, and he said, David, you know, I got married. I got these kids. I want to take them back to Korea to, you know, for them to visit your in-laws. I know that it's important to you to see if you could do some family of origin work. See, when you got your kids back and I went to court with you and we had a big picnic or a party, and when you got back together with your family, but that was the door I wasn't going to open for me. See, I got the promise for this dope fiend that this monster woke up every day. See, I'm not afraid of the disease of addiction. I have long respect for the disease of addiction. And if I think that I can take on the disease of addiction alone, I've lost my mind. I said, Billy, I really would like to be able to see if my mom was still alive, and if she's dead, I want to put a nice headstone. Because of you and teaching me how to go to work without poisoning other people for profit, if you're still poisoning other people for profit, you don't have to do that. I bought a non-refundable ticket. I had a certificate of naturalization that survived my entire addiction. And 6 weeks before I applied for a passport, I lost it. I went to the post office to apply for a passport with tweak paper. Look, I was on a mission. Handed this guy all these little pieces of paper and $360, and he told me, we're not taking that. This thing came up right here. I thought, I'm going over the counter. There's a line in the eighth step that David J. needs to remember every day. Because I'm a very self-willful person. That it's more important to understand than to be understood. And I stepped back and I counted for 10 seconds. And I said, I know that I don't have the proper paperwork. And I know that you're busy. Would you please take my money and this paper? And if it doesn't go through, I will truly understand that you did the best you could. And he looked down at this counter at this beautiful woman. And he thought, let me get rid of this guy. And he took my stuff. I'm working 13 hours hands-on turnover at the refinery. I'm working night shift. I get off work. I take a shower. I'm on my way to eat something. Go to a noon meeting, and the phone rings. It's the INS office in San Francisco, and they said, David J., did you apply for a passport? I said, yes. I said, well, why do you have all these little pieces of paper? So I said, I want to do family of origin work, and, you know, she said, what? See, because we have our own language. When newcomers come in, it sounds like gibberish to them because they don't know. They have to learn. You know what I mean? You know, it took practice to get everything out of the baggie without puncturing the plastic. You know? It takes time. I said, I'm adopted. I want to find my mom if she's still alive. And I'm a great sponsee, and I'll tell you how I know I'm a great sponsee. Because she said, David J., tell me that you have lost or misplaced your certificate of naturalization during a move. And my sponsor has told me some of the best information that you could buy, let alone get for free. And I have repeated the exact assignment, and I have refused to change until the pain of remaining the same became greater than the fear of change. So I said, I lost or misplaced my paperwork. I'm now on a plane. I had an unbelievable dream the night before. And right before I got on the plane, what the World Convention was in Atlanta, my sponsor called me. My sponsor can take somebody who's ready to jump out of their skin and give them 5 minutes alone on a beach or in a meeting and make them feel totally at home. I know that when I ask him a question, I need to be prepared for the answer because he's not a people pleaser. He's going to share his experience, strength, and hope. And if I have prejudice, and I don't mean that as far as skin color, if I'm afraid to accept a certain person, place, or thing, he will call me on it. I told him once, I said, I don't know if I could be that kind of actor that could do that, to play that part in that show. And I saw the righteous anger come up in him, because my sponsor loves all people, regardless of color, race, creed, sexual orientation. And if you don't have a sponsor that doesn't tell you the truth, you got the wrong sponsor. He said, David J., we're in Atlanta and the World Convention's kicking off. And you know what? You should be here because it's not complete without you. That's the shit that carried me for the next 14 days, because I went on a hell of a roller coaster. I landed in the middle of World Cup soccer. You know what I mean? Going through the airport, I looked like I was a sumo wrestler on tour. Americans are big people. I'm getting bigger all the time. We drove for 90 minutes in this limousine bus, and I didn't see any grass, and it was raining, and Billy went to his folks, and I was sitting in this little hotel, and this is where the literature comes in. I was on the right side of the international dateline. Lori was back in Bakersfield, California on the left side. I was in tomorrow, and she was in yesterday, and every time I'd be ready to jump out of my skin, she read me just for today. Billy's wife speaks absolute fluent Korean because that's where she's born. God gave me my translator because, you know what? God knows I couldn't do it on my own, you know? We got on this train, and we went to the very end. We got in this cab, and we started driving up this hill. And the last time I was on that hill, man, I was tied to a railing, to a man, and I had cried for so long I didn't have any more water in my body to squeeze out of my eyes. And yet, when we're going up this hill, I don't remember it being paved. And we come to this old Gothic stone building, and I thought, well, once we get there, there'll be a well on the right-hand side of this facility. We pull in, there's no well. Well, I said, well, we can't be in the right place. See, in order for me to be comfortable when I'm running on self-will, I need people, places, and things to remain just as I remember them in order for me to feel comfortable. The only really bad thing about that is there's three constants in life. There's a power greater than myself. That change is inevitable, and death will come sooner or later. So I can either get with the program, or I can continue to paint myself into a corner. It was a round, rotunda driveway. We came to a slow stop. I opened the door to the cab. It started coming down in buckets. I thought, this is the story of my life. Some people are born under a lucky sign, and then some people are born with no luck. Billy was present enough to say, tell the cab driver, hold it. I get to the door of this facility, and the receptionist opens it. They close their umbrellas. She takes us into this conference room. See, before I left for that trip, those 30 days before, I went to noon meetings, and I went to night meetings, and I went to late night meetings, and I said, this is my situation. I am scared to death, and I want to find an answer that I can live with. I said, would you pray for me? Because, see, the people that I admire are more interested in saving their ass than their face, and they'll tell you what's really going on in their day instead of being part of the NA cheerleading squad. And I don't have nothing against that. But you got to filter all your stuff, and I get the Reader's Digest, and you don't really tell me about the icky uncomfortableness of change, then I can't come to you when I'm going through it. This little old lady comes in, she got this gray hair and streaks of gray in her hair, and these little John Lennon glasses. She got this crack leather binder, and she looked at me, and she looked at Billy and his wife and his daughter, and she said, you know, we've been in business for almost 6 decades. She said, this has never happened. She said, thousands of people have come here looking for what you're looking for. I said, oh, shit, here it is. And one more to that stat. She said, your mother wrote us 30 days ago. She laid out 48 pristine pictures. Somebody had kept these pictures in an airtight bag. There was me at the beach. You remember when you were little and those pants from the guys in the Alps were big? Lederhosen or whatever it was. I had that shit on. I mean, that little military outfit, right? I have been an egghead my whole life. I finally got a body that fits the head. When I was a kid, I looked like an alien. You know? And she said, hold on a minute. And she ran down the hallway and she said, I called your mom's house. She's not home, but your aunt and your uncle are home and they want to see you. And the next day, I got to see my mom. Without Narcotics Anonymous, that would have never happened. See, I believe in one fellowship. I don't care where you go to get what you need. That is so cool. But I found a place where I could bring every problem in every part of my life to one particular program, to work one set of steps, to have one home group. So when it gets uncomfortable here, I just can't run and go over there and say, you know, nothing's going on. Friends. Friends will call you on your shit. They'll help you come move. They will sit in the hospital with you and your loved one. They'll go to court with you. They'll love you when they can't love you, when you can't love yourself. And most of all, they'll tell you the truth. I wanted to find my dad, who left me at the age of 2 and hit him in the back of the head with a baseball bat. To grab a set of handcuffs, a roll of duct tape, and once I got him secure and put him on my shoulder, take him to the closest laundry room I could find and cut the cord of the 220 plug off the dryer and give him what he gave me. And you know what she told me? Your daddy begged me to take you home. See, the basic text says, everything I know about the truth is subject for revision. So before I quit listening to my sponsor, telling the truth to my support group, and start hiding out from my higher power, I need to find out, am I interested in what I want, or am I interested in truth? Because truth doesn't come without pain. Three months ago, Lori and I went to San Francisco Airport, and we picked my mom up. We flew my mom over from Korea. We rented her a really nice house in San Jose right next to my cousin. My aunt and my uncle came with her. On Mother's Day, because of you, the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous, I surrounded her in flowers. There's a lot of answers I would still like to have, and she ain't going to give them to me. You want to know why? Because she don't have you in her life. She tells me stuff that's completely contrast to what the fellowship teaches me. And that's because she has lived a life of isolation and fear. My job is to love her anyway. Once I got panic stricken and I called my sponsor and I said, I don't know if I can take care of her. And he said, it's not your job. He said, God will take care of her. He's been taking care of her all this time before you found her. If you're like me and you want to get behind the driver's seat all the time, God will take care of every person that is looking to have a relationship in any contents that you use that word of a power greater than yourself or good orderly direction. My life ain't perfect. I got enough problems to keep it interesting. About a year ago, I wanted to quit on my relationship. And I had a long talk with my sponsor. You know, on Monday, at Camp Mokalea, I'm going to get married. Billy told me when I was coming to Hawaii in 1998, he gave me this guy's name. He said, this guy came to Sonoma to visit us. We'd take these T-shirts.
And when I came to Hawaii, I walked up through the registration. It was at the Turtle Bay Hilton. And I met Jerry, Loma, and Alex, the three musketeers of Oahu. And they're still in service today. Every problem that occurred in my life, in this little rock, this jewel of the Pacific, I've gotten an answer. When I needed to find my family through having a private detective, my sponsor helped me. When I walked through the pain of not being able to get back together with my adopted parents, you know what? This fellowship gave me the aloha that I never, and sometimes still do not fully understand. If you've been here and you think that what you had was a convention experience, I want to tell you that what you got was the merging of the unconditional love of Narcotics Anonymous and the aloha spirit of Hawaii. And I pray that you will carry it with you. You know, I want to give a big shout out to Coco County. I want to thank each and every one of you coming to hear me and Jerry, me and Judy share tonight. And I want to thank Rick M. for being the brother that I never had. If no one told you, I truly need you. And I want you and I love you. Mahalo for letting me share.
Oh, you're all invited to the wedding. Okay, bring a side dish.
Let's thank David and Judy for speaking, huh? And Ellen's been asked to read just for today.
David's my family. He has a bedroom in my house. And eight kids that call him David. They have a dad. I'm Ellen, and I am a grateful recovering addict from Needles, California. Just for today, tell yourself, just for today, my thoughts will be on my recovery, living and enjoying life without the use of drugs. Just for today, I will have faith in someone in NA who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. Just for today, I will have a program. I will try to follow it to the best of my ability. Just for today, through NA, I will try to get a better perspective on my life. Just for today, I will be unafraid. My thoughts will be on my new associations, people who are not using and who have found a new way of life. So long as I follow that way, I have nothing to fear. And if you want to go to David's wedding, you better ask him what time it's at, because he doesn't give us all the details.
Thanks, Ellen. All right, let's close this meeting in the usual fashion, followed with a third step prayer.